This is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The word distraction has been popular lately. All of us are feeling the pull of our smartphones, laptops, and other blinging and dinging news and email notifications. But what if you were labeled the distraction? For many girls in school, this is often how they are unfairly characterized, from double standards and dress code policies to the ways universities address sexual violence. A new book, edited by two Illinois State University professors, aims to disrupt this narrative of girls as a quote-unquote distraction and talk about the effects this can have on young women and girls long after they leave school. Erin McCulloch is a professor in the School of Teaching and Learning at Illinois State University. Erin, thank you so much for being here today.
Hi, Brian. Thanks for having me.
And Dawn Buechner is professor in the Criminal Justice Sciences Department and Women's and Gender Studies Program at Illinois State University. Thank you for being here as well.
Thank you for having us.
And the book, again, is called Distraction, Girls, School, and Sexuality. You can join our conversation at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. Or you can always tweet us at 21st show. So, Erin, I'm going to begin with you. Can you talk a little bit more about this word distraction and how it's been applied to girls in school settings?
Sure. So, you know, the idea for this book started a few years ago during the trial with Brett Kavanaugh was going on and the Me Too movement was in full swing. And Dawn and I were talking about, you know, everything going on, and we read articles and everything coming up, and I work with pre-service teachers here in the School of Teaching and Learning, and the word distraction always comes up, no matter what the issue is, whether it's dress code. There have been instances of, you know, what students can wear when they're going to prom, and that creates a distraction and proms get canceled, et cetera. And so we started talking about, you know, what does distraction really mean? And ultimately it is a very convenient way to sweep under the rug that we are talking about ways that schools in general sexualize girls and young women and then sort of punish them for it. We know that girls and young women receive lots of messages through social media all around them. You know, the Facebook papers recently has highlighted this as well. And then in school, we have dress codes, and they're often harshly applied to girls. Dress codes often inequitably target girls' dress more than they do boys. And so this idea of girls becoming a distraction is problematic in a lot of ways, because really what it's telling girls and young women is that they are responsible for the thoughts and behaviors of boys and young men, and therefore must be mindful of it at all times rather than focus on their own education. And that's one of the things that we wanted to talk about with this book.
Yeah, and just a point of clarification. I think you were referring to the Senate confirmation hearings of Brett Kavanaugh.
Yes, I'm
right?
Sorry.
Yeah.
Thank
okay,
you.
Okay, yeah. Just yes. don't want to get sued.
Fair enough. Thank you.
I you know, in what you say fits right in line with something somebody's already said to us on Twitter. One of our regular commenters said, "I and other moms of sixth to eighth grade girls at their middle school just 4 years ago tried to stand up for our daughter's self-confidence when their principal, their female principal, prohibited visible shoulders and straps. She refused to see her rules sexualized our children's bodies and minds." Dawn, I mean, does that fit into the ideas that you're following in this book?
It absolutely does. And, you know, as a women in gender studies professor and an activist, I feel like I have a duty to call this out and dismantle it when I see it. So Erin and I make points to recognize these concerns of the mothers. We talk about how the patterns with different requirements for girls versus boys in our dress codes is not something that's US specific and instead is happening in countries all over the world. So I think for these Illinois mothers that are speaking to us via Twitter, you know, that they should know that this is something that's pervasive worldwide. And we try to call those things out in the book.
And we need to take a break in about a minute and a half here. But what are some of the effects, Dawn, of being labeled, of a girl who's, you know, feels like they're being labeled a quote unquote distraction?
I think there's a lot of consequences that happen to the individual in terms of their own beliefs about themselves, their self-esteem and things like that. But when I consider it from the larger perspective, that what we're doing is producing systems in place that benefit boys and men over girls and women, we are setting up a world where these inequalities are going to persist. And we're also setting up something connected more closely with my justice positionality that puts women and girls at a disadvantage with regard to gender-based victimization. So there's a lot of different forces operating, many different levels here.
Yeah, and I think we're going to come back maybe a little later in the conversation to what you were talking about there, and even how this interfaces with the criminal justice system, some of these ideas, as well as university policies on sexual violence. We're going to continue after a short break. If you're just joining us, we're talking about a new book edited by two professors from Illinois State University, Aaron McCulloch and Dawn Buechner. The book is called Distraction, Girls, School, and Sexuality, and it's about the ways that particularly school policies tend to sort of categorize young girls as a distraction and how that affects them throughout their lives. 800-222-9455 if you want to join our conversation. That's 800-222-9455. Maybe you yourself have been subject to one of these dress code policies in your life, or you have a girl in your life who has. We'd love to hear about it at 800-222-9455, or you can tweet us at 21st Show. More to come after a short break. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're speaking with Aaron McCulloch, a professor in the School of Teaching and Learning at Illinois State University, and Dawn Buechner, a professor in Criminal Justice Sciences Department and Women's and Gender Studies Program at Illinois State. They're the editors of a new volume of essays called Distraction, Girls, School, and Sexuality. 800-222-9455 is the number if you want to join our conversation today. That's 800-222-9455. So, Aaron, what effect does this framing of girls as distractions, how does that affect boys and how girls view boys and men in school?
That's a really great question. You know, one thing that I think as adults we forget about schools as we, you know, get older is that schools, and this is one thing that I always say in my classes, is that schools are gendered spaces and they're also genderizing spaces. And in schools, adults are the ones with power. So the messages that you receive there really have an impact on you. And, you know, one of the things that we wanted to do with this book is look at all the ways in which girls and young women experience everyday sexism, misogyny, and different practices that uphold that throughout school. And, you know, so I think there are several ways that we could approach this since, you know, because they're spending so much time in their youth in school and rules and expectation behavior are governed by adults. It really reinforces these ideas that, you know, so girls are, like I said earlier, we have the Facebook papers that came out, and we know that the research showed that when girls feel bad about themselves, Instagram makes them feel worse, right? And so, and how they're trying to present themselves at this time in their life, especially thinking about middle school, high school, to their peers and to others, and wanting to possibly attract attention, but only the right kind of attention. And so you have a lot of mixed messages. I think one of the problems too is that the way that boys and young men receive these messages, right? So for example, I'm thinking about a case at the Charter Day School that in North Carolina a few years ago, where the dress code insisted that girls could only wear skirts or jumpers or dresses because they wanted to promote this idea of chivalry and to distinguish between boys and girls. And it led to, you know, even in the winter, girls could wear leggings to stay warm, but the dress code was heavily skewed that girls were still uncomfortable. And so this idea that, you know, a really antiquated idea about chivalry that, you know, I don't know how much having girls stay cold during the winter really promotes that idea. So I think there's a lot of really conflicting messages that are going on when this happens for both girls and young women in relation to being with boys and young men, and then also for boys and young men as well, in terms of what is appropriate and acceptable behavior when they're interacting with girls and young women.
Yeah, Dawn, maybe I'm imagining there are some school administrators out there saying, have you spent time around teenage boys? How do you respond if an administrator says, look, you know, I know what teenage boys are thinking, and you know, if girls are dressed a certain way, they're not going to focus on their lessons or something like that. How do you respond to people who bring that critique?
That's because those standards have been in place for so long and been ignored for so many years doesn't mean that we have to continue to accept that. And we have to hold young boys and men accountable for behaviors and change the way that we approach the whole system within the school so that we start to dismantle these patterns that set young girls and young women up to be positionally below young men.
All right, let's talk about some of the ways that other identities can, intersect here is the key word to use. One of the chapters in the book discusses about young Black girls and how they're often, I think the term is adultified, earlier than their peers who are white. Dawn, maybe can you talk a little bit about how school policies disproportionately affect Black girls?
Absolutely. And, you know, to honor the Black feminists that provided us really with the foundation of understanding these systems within the U.S. and the world, we do dedicate a lot of the book to this intersectional nature of the problem. So looking at how race and ethnicity combine with gender identity, sexual orientation, all of these various things that shape a person's experience. And we know that school systems, particularly public school systems, are set up in a way that because of purposeful historic exclusion of people of color, we create this environment that's about 80% white teachers with a majority school of students of color. And within that, we know that we're not recognizing everyone. We're not producing a culture that's inclusive. Instead, we have one hegemonic white, you know, US ideal of what gender means. And, you know, Aaron and I are trying to disrupt that and change it. And some of the people in our book help us do that quite well. You mentioned a great chapter for that. Other listeners might want to check out Dr. Farinda Wu's work in our book with her colleagues. They call out the school to prison pipeline and how, although we do acknowledge that young Black men in the US particularly have been heavy pushed out of schools into prisons, we don't often talk about how this actually impacts young Black women in our country and that they are pushed out 5 times more likely than white girls and twice as likely as white boys to be pushed out. And it's not as if it's for a violent offense. It's not bringing a weapon to school. It's not engaging in something that harms someone. Instead, it's these subjective kinds of things where their behavior is, you know, vaguely described as disruptive or disrespectful, these kinds of things. You know, we wouldn't necessarily argue taking action if it's a weapon or a violent act, but that's not the case here. And if we keep, you know, kind of not discussing what's actually happening in these schools, we're never going to make it a place that welcomes everybody, including our girls and young women of color.
All right, let's go to the phones at 800-222-9455. Neela is on the line. Neela, thank you for calling in.
Hi. I had a experience as a young woman in my 30s. I worked at a very large manufacturer facility in Illinois, and I was told that on days when the temperature would be well over the 90s, sometimes into the hundreds inside the facility, that I was would be required to wear a bra, even though, you know, no one else was required to wear a bra. The men obviously were not. And I was singled out and told that this was being done to me because I was creating a distraction for the male employees who might injure themselves by looking at me and not paying attention to their what they were doing. They could cut off their fingers. I was told they could injure themselves in some fashion if they were staring at me instead of looking at their job. And being a, you know, my entire life, I've been a very small-breasted woman and have never worn a bra. And to be singled out in this fashion, even in my 30s, not as a young woman, but, you know, a grown adult in my 30s, it was still humiliating. And I felt very degraded, you know, being forced to wear some underwear that I didn't even own and told, you know, that I was violating the company policy. Well, later on, after I, of course, you know, tucked tail and did what they said, I researched the policy of the dress code, and there was no such thing in that policy whatsoever that even went to that point. And, you know, it was just all a tactic to scare me to get me to do what they wanted at that point in time.
Well, Neela, I'm sorry that happened, and thank you so much for sharing your story with us today. I really appreciate you calling in.
Thank you.
Dawn, I guess these are not experiences, maybe it's obvious to say, but these are not experiences confined to school age. They can follow women throughout their lives, right?
Absolutely. You know, one of the things that Aaron and I wanted to showcase in the book was that this was boundless across time. So even though, you know, it's happening to people that are preschool age and also in lots of countries other than the U.S., it's something that follows the person throughout their lifetimes. And we want to be able to showcase that. And I'm so thankful that our caller just shared with us that it's not even confined just to schools. And instead that when we look at workplaces, it happens there as well. Mm-hmm. And certainly in Aaron and my workplace, you know, university campus, there's huge concerns regarding campus sexual assault. And it is also a problem that's globally among the highest kinds of gender-based violence in the world. Young women on college campuses, LGBTQ survivors of sexual violence, very low reporting rates. And we can understand when we look more closely at some of the problems with processing, why people are reluctant to come forward.
And I'd like to add also, Neela, thank you for sharing your story. And it is a perfect example of exactly what Dawn's been saying, that these attitudes do carry well into adulthood that start very early in school. And as we were saying earlier, that it is not, you know, the lessons that girls and young women learn are also learned and reinforced by boys and young men. You know, and so we have a lot of conversations with girls and young women about dress code and what's appropriate, but we don't seem to be having these same conversations with boys and young men about being responsible for your own actions and thoughts. I was just recently in an area high school, not too far from Bloomington Normal, and there was a sign up for a self-defense class for females. Which was, you know, that's fine. But I wondered where the flyer was for a class for the boys and young men about consent and violence against women and interrupting that. So thank you again, Neela, for sharing your story.
Yeah, we're running very short on time, and there's more in the book that we have only really sort of hinted at. You mentioned how these policies play out on college campuses in terms of gender-based violence. There's also work on school policies can affect LGBTQ young people. But Aaron, maybe just to sort of big picture, to end on a big picture, and again, we only have about a minute left here.
Sure.
The book wants to disrupt the narrative. How do you hope that teachers or school administrators start implementing policies that could make a difference?
Sure. I think schools can simply just begin looking at their dress code. A couple of years ago, I spent considerable amount of time looking at dress codes from all 50 states. And still in this day and age, we have dress codes that say that students will dress in a manner that reflects their gender. And as you mentioned, this excludes our LGBTQ plus students, our gender nonconforming students, our non-binary students. So schools can just immediately begin to look at those practices, thinking about the practices that they have in schools that are very gendered, and even teachers thinking about their own classroom practice. One thing for me that I've been working on is even recognizing the gendered language that I might use in my own teaching. I primarily have classes with all women, and I do not use the term "you guys" to address them. I use the word "friends," I say "teacher candidates," I say "students," but I don't use the term "you guys." So I think there's a lot of small and things and also larger things that schools can do, that teachers can do, and there's a lot of professional development out there that schools can look into.
Aaron Mikulak is a professor in the School of Teaching and Learning at Illinois State University. Dawn Buechner is professor in Criminal Justice Sciences and Women's and Gender Studies program at Illinois State. Together, they are the editors of the book of essays, Distraction, Girls, School, and Sexuality. Thank you so much for being with us and sharing your work with us today on the 21st.
Thanks so much, Brian.
Thank you, Brian. We appreciate it.
And that is all the time we have for our show today. Before we go, I do want to urge you to visit our website. You can find links to the first set of stories we talked about earlier, the Ag, Big Ag U stories, and links to our podcast. The 21st is a production of Illinois Public Media. I'm Brian Mackey. Thanks for listening.